Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. All right, everyone. Good morning. It is May 11th. I cannot believe it is Friday, and it is going to be a very exciting day. I am in Cheshire, Connecticut today. Yesterday, of course, I was in Bethel with Walnut Hills Community Church folks, and today I'm in Cheshire, and I'll be performing tonight with my partners Bob Stromberg and Michael Pierce Donnelly in the show Triple Espresso. So we're going to be talking about that in the second hour with Bob and Mike. Ron Dischinger was the director of a retirement community center in Cheshire. We're going to talk to him in just a minute. 39 years in the business, and he had quite a vision as to what senior care might look like. And I know if you're in that season of life where you've got aging parents and you're trying to figure out where mom and dad might go and what those communities might be like and what to look out for and what to be nervous about, you're going to want to stick around and listen to Ron. We've got a great, great show coming up. We'll take a short break and get the show underway live from Hartford in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. So glad you're with me today. I hope your day is starting off well. I have in studio Ron Dischinger. He has been involved in senior care for most of his career, I'd say all of 39 years, and recently retired. But I've always been fascinated with the idea of senior care. As a boomer, all of us have been faced with, what about mom and dad? Where's a good place for them to go? And what can we expect? Why is it so expensive? Are they getting the care they need? And it goes on and on and on. So I've always wanted to have this discussion because if you're around my age, and I know I am, you do have that conversation with friends all the time. How are your parents? How are they doing? If they're still around. And then all of a sudden it's the idea of that senior care, which is a very sensitive subject. And here to talk to me about that is Ron Dischinger. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning.
Well, let's talk about what it was like maybe 100 years ago. Senior care wasn't really much of an option, was it? I mean, you just took care of your parents.
That's very true. And also, I think it fell in the lap of the church as well. I think churches were great providers of care for the elders in their congregations.
And wouldn't you say a lot of social justice programs were really done by churches back then?
Absolutely.
And they probably should return there. Because that's a good place for them to be versus run by the government.
I was involved with Elam Park Baptist Home in Cheshire, Connecticut for 39 years. Mm-hmm. It had grown out of the old Swedish Baptist congregation in their concern for the tired and worn out Swedes of the Baptist General Conference and other worthy people.
Right, people. Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's where that started way back in 1907, and it certainly was a social concern ministry of the churches that that began that.
Mm-hmm.
People were not living as long then, mm-hmm. and probably tougher in their later years. Today we see, the baby boom generation coming along, and people in very good health. Needing more options for seniors as they're living well into their 80s, 90s, and past 100.
Right, right. So when people start considering this phase of life, this senior care living, which for a lot of people, they think I would soon start sooner than later because I don't want to have to take care of a house and, you know, I don't mind having a nice restaurant on the premise that serves good meals. And my sister, Laura, always said that, you know, you're always comfortable among your peers. So when you're all together, should be kind of a fun time to have fellowship and enjoy that phase of life. But when you start having those conversations, do people go kicking and screaming a little bit, or are they more willing to want to move, or how does it work?
In the last couple of months, as I've hit retirement, I've been looking at the terminology of Medicare.
Okay.
And trying to understand all the ins and outs of Medicare. And I would say that the senior living options in the field is probably one of the more complicated to understand, because there's so many, so much different terminology out there for them. And so I think, I think it's a good place for people to sit down with friends and kind of talk through what they're hearing, what some of the options are, both for themselves and for their parents. Today, some of what we're seeing is that the seniors that are needing their care in their 80s and 90s, their children are in their early 50s or 60s. Yeah. We've seen situations where they're actually some of the children are in not as good health as their parents.
Interesting.
So there's a strange dynamic that is set up there with parents trying to care for their senior.
Mm-hmm. When you start looking at finding a place and you start seeing the lovely brochures, and they're all well produced and put together, what are some of the things that you would recommend seniors to be looking for in terms of housing like this and living environments?
That's an excellent question. And I think as people look particularly at communities that cater to seniors, that that they should do some background checks into that. And there is a national organization, CARF, the Commission on the Accreditation of Rehab Facilities, which sounds strange when you're looking at senior facilities, but they have a standards board that is sort of the good housekeeping seal of approval for retirement communities, for nursing homes, for assisted living facilities, and a variety of different services. And they do accrediting of those communities. Now, full disclosure, I've been a surveyor for CARF for probably 25 plus years, but it was just a part-time thing that I did. I would go out into communities three or four times a year with my peers, and to look at see how they were meeting the standards that had been set up by CARF and by their peers, which was a voluntary accreditation for meeting the standards established by their peers. So I think that that's a good place to start with that good housekeeping seal of approval.
I agree.
But then get into the communities, look at the services, look at the background. Most of the social service agencies in the past were begun as offshoots of the church. And had very strong missions and were purpose-driven organizations. So I think you should take a look at some of the background of the social service agencies and what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. What might separate the good ones from the not-so-good ones?
Probably a good place to start is a look at the financials of the organization, to see if they're properly using their money, to see where the money goes. A not-for-profit organization is putting all of the profit back into the good of the community. For-profit organizations may have some other interests that they are investing in, and I think it's important that the dollars that are being raised by the services provided go to the people that are actually being served.
Mm-hmm. All right, Ron, let me take a break. When I come back, I've got more questions about senior care. And because I think it continues to be a topic of conversation amongst my friends, and everyone seems to be wondering what's the best route for mom and dad, and where they might go and how they might live out their days at this phase of their life. This is a big subject of concern for many. So we'll take a short break and return in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I have Ron Dischinger in studio. Ron has been in senior care for 39 years, and so I find this topic fascinating, especially for the boomers. Now, as the boomers get older, Ron, they're going to want more stuff. The retirement home of the future is not your grandparents' retirement home, is it?
Not at all. In fact, when I first got into it, our dining service program was more or less a take it or leave it program. And today we have a full formal dining room, as well as a marketplace, a coffee shop, a bistro that caters to the individual need of each of the residents. And as you can imagine, dining is a very big part of all of our lives, and certainly if you're living in a specific community, as Elam Park is, it's known as a continuing care retirement community.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has multiple services on the same campus, but dining is one of the big programs there.
Yeah, I would imagine it's the center of most of the social activity. I mean, things quiet down after dinner, don't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Except at Elam Park.
Okay, of course.
Another important part.
So when you talk about multiple function facilities, mm-hmm. and when you're looking at a facility, maybe to have mom or dad go to, or maybe both mom and dad, should you be looking for a facility that can accommodate all different levels of the rest of life? Is that kind of what the goal is? And is that what a good facility would have?
That certainly is the model that I was associated with for my entire career. And we've actually seen the CCRC industry grow from 300 communities around the country in the early 70s to upwards of 2,000 today. And as the baby boom generation continues to grow, I think that we'll see that only expand further. But that means that a person comes to the community and they can live fully independent in their own home. Mm-hmm. But as services needs increase, they're available on the same site.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not transferred to an assisted living facility or to a nursing home for recovery from a hip replacement or from a stroke. Or
right.
if a couple move in and one of the spouses has health issues, all of the care is provided there right on site.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk, if you would, a little bit about across the industry, the sticker shock associated. Is that a fair, or is it like, no, this is fair. This is what you sort of pay to be in this kind of environment.
Let's bring up one other point. And that's that the average age in the CCR community is probably right around 84, 85 today.
Okay.
So people at that stage of their life are not necessarily looking for what's going to have the best resale value. So they're not looking
True.
At this next move into their home as, okay, well, what am I going to get for it when I move out?
Right.
And quite frankly, they're built upon the principle that if you take the equity that you have in your home mm-hmm. and you invest it in a retirement community and you have a reasonable Social Security and pension,
mm-hmm.
you can meet the monthly service fees. You shouldn't have to touch any life investments that you have in order to live in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be as inexpensive as living in your own home.
I find that encouraging because I've certainly had a lot of conversations with people that have said, you know, maybe it's the boomers, maybe it's the kids that are going through the sticker shock, and the parents are like, this is right, this is okay. It's the kids that I talk to that are saying, whoa, this is expensive.
And I think that that's probably from individuals that have not gotten into the community to really take a look at what the costs are, because it really covers soup to nuts. When, once you come in there and you're you have invested in the entrance fee and then you have the monthly service fee, all of your normal costs of life are covered in those fees. And as I said, you're not touching life investments in order to live day by day.
So if there's a quality facility and people decide, yes, I want to go move there, it's, this is a great place. Talk a little bit about the faith life of people that come into those facilities who might not have faith. And when you get a little bit older, are you more open to the gospel, or are you more set in your ways, or how do they work that out?
Well, that's another very good question, and I think that Elam Park has had a unique and distinct approach, although coming from many of these communities coming out of faith-based churches have also looked at the spiritual needs or the spiritual life of every person that comes into the community. At Elam Park, we have invited retired pastors and missionaries under the Mary Melby program to live at Elam Park to be part of the chaplaincy program. So we have a full-time chaplain on campus, but that's his 9-to-5 job.
You're right.
We have retired pastors and missionaries that live in the community, that eat with the residents, that share their lives on a daily basis, and are more likely to be there when the person has that need or that big question of what is life about? And they're there to answer that for them. And we find that an exciting aspect of a very vibrant community.
What's it like for a person to work in that environment, a staff that get maybe attached and start, you know, falling in love with the people that they serve?
Well, when I began at Elam Park, I thought I had made a mistake. The first 2 weeks, I was not sure that this was for me. But 39 years later, I look back at it, at that experience, and say that that was probably God's purpose for my life, and I was very pleased to have a very dedicated professional staff of people that worked there, and I think many of them saw that that intersected their life purpose as well, and were able to provide great services at Elam Park.
Yeah. Now, Ron, you come from a place that you had such a great staff and such a great vision for what God was calling you to do. And do you see senior housing going up that maybe are not driven by those wonderful principles? Maybe somebody goes, I think this is a way to make some money.
Absolutely. In fact, I think there was a big change when Medicare actually came into place in the 1970s, when the church actually kind of stepped back, if you will, from providing some of these services, because the government stepped in with Medicare to support, if you will, the seniors. I think as we look today, that the for-profit companies have found this as a way of making money. Certainly, the baby boom generation have lots of dollars that they can invest in this, and they are there are organizations that are driven by the profit margin rather than the mission. And what is unique about many of the CCRCs today is their mission driven of serving the people.
Are we missing something in the life journey where, like, we started off this conversation 100 years ago, there were multi-generational families in one house, and, you know, we took care of grandma lived with us, you know, are we missing something, or have we gotten to the point where we don't want anything to be too inconvenient in our life?
I think it's probably that we've been raised with a sense of independence.
Yeah, there you go.
And we want to care for ourselves.
Yeah.
I think that as the generations come along, that we're looking less for our children to support us and for us to be a support to our children and grandchildren, who, by the way, I think have it much more difficult today than we did when we were growing up. But we have planned for retirement years and have set that out. And yeah, good or bad, we're more independent than our parents were, and probably more healthy. I remember my grandmother struggled with health issues and lived at our home for 15 years before she went the last 2 years to a nursing home. But she struggled with some significant health issues that required family support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great legacy. My grandma, for her 90th birthday, she returned the dress she bought for her 90th birthday because she thought it made her hips look too wide. Oh, boy. It's fantastic. Ron, thanks so much for coming in to the studio. And Ron Dischinger has been my guest. He is retired now, but was involved in senior care for 39 years at Elam Park in Cheshire, Connecticut. Thanks for being in the show and on the show, and we'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. A special thanks to Ron Dischinger. So glad to have you on the program. Did you know on this day in 1816, the American Bible Society was formed? That's a good piece of news. We're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, Dr. Wayne Detzler is going to be with me, and what a life he has lived, and we're going to hear all about it. Be back in just a minute.
Children, a blessing or a burden? The Bible has the answer. This is Jim Garlow in a special series for the family. Psalm 127:3 says, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward." God values children and has put them in your home to nurture and grow. It's where adulthood is taught and where children grow in wisdom and truth. And the Bible has much to say about how we go about doing that. Colossians 3:21, for example, "Fathers, don't provoke your children to anger, lest they become discouraged. If you have to say no with respect and love. Say yes whenever it's appropriate. And teach children Proverbs 3:12, "Young man, young woman, do not resent it when God corrects you." This isn't for lightweights, but it is God's design for the family, so that biblical values are instilled from generation to generation to generation. This is Jim Garlow.
Welcome back to the show. So glad you're with me this morning. It is 24 minutes till the top of the hour. My guest this morning, Professor Wayne Detzler, Ph.D., has written over 30 books. And when I started my conversation with Wayne, I thought, you know, all right, we've got 16 minutes. And now I'm realizing I need somewhere between 16 hours and 16 days to cover his life because it is absolutely fascinating. His latest book that he just came out with is called Living Words in the Psalms. And, Wayne, it's just an absolute delight to have you on the program.
It's great to be here.
Well, thank you so much. You were saying that you went from youth for Christ, and now it's geriatrics for Jesus.
That's right. Life changes, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Now, you wrote your doctoral dissertation on social action.
Yes, I did. I wrote on why Christians are involved in social action.
Okay.
And I wrote about how the British Christians were involved in the continent of Europe when Napoleon was spreading atheism across Europe.
Hmm. So you were talking about social justice as the possibility of getting in front of the gospel. And almost, you know, some people today are treating social justice like that is their salvation.
Exactly. And it often gets reversed. But the biblical picture is that when our hearts are transformed and we are born again, then we want to change the society in which we live.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have lived all over the world. I know you've traveled and lived in various places. You were in England for 13 years?
We're in England for 13 years, Germany for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we lived in China for 3 years.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about your experience in China.
Well, when we went to China, I was sent over there to teach English as a second language. That's always the cover under which you're able to get into the country. Really, I was going to train leaders of the underground church. There were 80 million Christians in the underground church then. Now there are 130 million in the underground church, the unregistered church. And so I trained some of the leaders who now lead those churches.
That's fantastic. And you were there for 3 years, yeah. And that's quite a bit of fruit you've seen.
Yeah, my wife and I just lived in houses. They were called safe houses. They were okay. Very much safe houses where the government knew we were there, and I could never walk outside. I had to walk on the roof at night after dark, so they didn't see me as a foreigner.
Mm-hmm. So talk about some of the writings you've done. I mean, this book, Living Words in the Psalms, I'm excited about this. I love the Psalms. I go there every day.
Well, I started writing when I was a young missionary living in Germany about the changing church in Europe, and I chronicled what had happened in the church with the onset of liberal theology and showed how it had fallen apart. And then from then on, I went to my first love, which is New Testament studies, and have written mainly books about how to apply the Greek New Testament in living for Christ.
Mm-hmm. Now, your average person does not receive a letter in the mail from President Donald Trump very often. You got one last week.
Yeah, I got one from him last week.
Oh, that's crazy, Wayne.
Yeah.
Well, how did you get a letter from President Trump?
Well, I was talking about the opioid crisis because I'm working on a new issue which will bring together grandparents against the opioid crisis, and I'm hoping for 1 million grandparents to join me on Facebook against the opioid crisis. Is called Grandparents Against Opioids.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote the president about it, and he said, go get them. And I said, you know, you're a wimp, man. That's all you can say is go get them. You know?
So then what happened? Then did he send you a letter?
He sent me a letter, yeah, and I stuck it in my file. I've got several letters from presidents.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Like, what other president?
Clinton wrote to me quite a bit. Barack Obama wrote to me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So
and
how
I think
so
I go back as I think I go back as far as Reagan, actually.
Wow, how are you so popular with presidents?
I always write them and tell them that, you know, to man up and do the right thing and what God wants done in our society.
Yeah.
I believe we speak truth to power. I really believe this.
Yeah. I think it's very cool that you actually take the time to do that because you're holding whoever's in office, you're holding accountable.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you have no problem doing that at all. One of the things when you talk about opioids and trying to galvanize all these grandparents to join forces, what is the hopeful outcome?
I wanted to see us to liberate kids from their exposure to opioids, mm-hmm. and to enforce in our families a culture of knowledge. And knowledge is the only thing that will stop the abuse of opioids. We all have drugs. I mean, I got a cupboard full of medicines here.
Mm-hmm.
I put them so high that not one of my grandkids or great grandkids can reach them.
How do you get them?
I get them by prescription because
no, but how do you reach them?
I have a couple of stools here.
Okay. I don't want you to get hurt. But no, that's oftentimes where kids get their first little experiment with drugs is in the family medicine chest.
We had a missionary kid in Sweden 30 years ago. She found drugs next to her grandmother's bed who was visiting from America. She took them and died.
Mm, that's horrible.
And that was 30 years ago. And now this has become epidemic. That's why I've launched the internet campaign of Grandparents Against Opioids.
Yeah, and so far so good?
So far so good. We're 3 days into it. I'm getting all kinds of reactions.
Wow. So
nobody wants to stone me yet.
Really? Well, maybe I'll be the first one.
Yeah,
you never
thanks,
know.
Buddy.
Yeah,
right.
So how would they go to find this webpage that
just
they could jump on
board?
Just put
grandparents VS versus opioids.
Okay. Yeah,
that'll take you to the site.
Yeah, obviously a huge problem, and it's something that needs to be addressed. You know, I had a friend, and I've said this before on the air, but she had her hip replaced. And when she left, I said to her, did you take any of the opioids that you received? And she said, yeah, I took 3 or 4.
Yeah.
I said, just out of curiosity, how many did they give you when you left the hospital? She said, I had a bottle of 80.
I did, too. I had surgery about a year and a half ago, and the same thing happened to me. And immediately what I did is I took them to my local police station here in Cheshire, and mm-hmm. they have a box that says for discarded drugs.
Really?
And I took them there and discarded them at the police station.
Okay.
Because if you flush them down the drain, they go in the water system.
Yeah.
If you put them in the garbage, they can be found. And so I wanted to make sure that they were gone forever.
Yeah. Now, you're a man of prayer, and you're also committed to helping and facilitating prayer every day.
right
here at this facility at Elam Park. Talk a little bit about what you hear and what you're seeing in their prayer room.
I'm seeing a lot of interesting things in the prayer meeting. The basic thing I'm seeing more than anything else is with people my age, elderly people obviously, is they come for healing.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while they come for prayer about their family,
mm-hmm.
but almost always, I would say 80% come for prayers of healing. And it's marvelous to lay my hands on them. And Brian Bedard, who's the president of Elam Park, and I prayed over a vendor the other day for his granddaughter, who was not expected to live, and she was healed, and she's alive.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah. All right, Wayne, I'm going to take a little break when I come back. I've got a very interesting question for you. You were recently the state representative for AARP. Do I have that correct?
Absolutely. I'm state president.
State president of AARP.
Connecticut.
And you're not going to want to tune out, because when we come back, you're going to hear some unbelievable news about what happened to Wayne. Speaking to Dr. Wayne Detzler, we'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. It is 12 minutes until the top of the hour. Thanks for being with me this morning. I am in Cheshire, Connecticut today. I had a wonderful time yesterday at Walnut Hills Community Church, and today I'm in Cheshire at Elam Park, and we're having a great conversation with Dr. Wayne Detzler. Wayne was the president for the state for AARP. Do I have that right, Wayne?
That's right.
That's a pretty big job, and recently they told you, Wayne, we're done with you.
Yeah, I actually got fired. It was a lot of fun to get fired, you know.
Have you been fired before?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
It's totally liberating, you know, because there's not much you say after you get fired, you know.
Right, yeah.
But the director called me into her office and said that you're far too conservative philosophically and religiously for us. You're fired.
Oh, you're kidding.
So it didn't take her long.
Yeah. It was, that was it, and you
that
were
was
gone.
It. Yep. She said, clean out your office. You're out of here.
And your response was what?
To go on the internet and tell everybody.
Okay. So you're the state representative for AARP.
I'm state president.
And your conservative values cannot be tolerated.
Nope.
And was there anything in particular that she specified?
No, she just felt generally that I was on the wrong side of all the decisions. You know, I was on the wrong side of family issues. I'm a strong family advocate. I'm on the wrong side of religious issues. I'm a strong believer in the Lord Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the wrong side of all the political issues.
Mm-hmm. Has that organization been left-leaning for a while? I don't know the origins of AARP.
Washington, D.C. is very left-leaning.
Well, that I
and
know.
So the national is very left-leaning.
Mm-hmm.
And then the states vary. And so Connecticut is probably slightly to the left of Karl Marx.
Usually I do the jokes on the show, Wayne. But that's
sorry.
Okay.
I'll loan you. Do you want a copy? Copyright that one?
But what is it like if the state is more liberal and you have a great heart for evangelism? You've been involved in evangelism your whole life, haven't
yep.
you?
That's my basic spiritual gift, I think, is evangelism.
All right. Tell the listening audience a little bit about your history. I mean, your mom?
My grandmother was a suffragette.
Your grandmother was a suffragette. Okay.
My mother was one of the leaders in the temperance movement. Remember that one from around the Prohibition era?
Not really.
They were against alcohol.
I remember that.
That was my mother's social action thing, you know. And then they just kept talking to me. They said, you got to always be involved in society.
Yeah.
You can't just have your faith for yourself.
Yeah.
And so when I went to college, I studied this in the doctorate and in the master's and my bachelor's program. I had a professor at Wheaton College who agreed with me 100%. He's my closest friend. And he really pushed me into social action.
Mm-hmm. Talk about, faith and works,
I believe that as I trust in the Lord Jesus Christ, he changes my life.
Right.
And this changes my outlook on everything. For instance, I have a different view of my wife who went to be with the Lord several years ago, but I loved her because the Lord was in my life and the Lord bound us together in marriage. I love my children, my grandchildren, now my great-grandchildren in a different way, and I want to see the best for them. I don't want to control them.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see the best for them. I want to see what God will do in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got a 10-year-old granddaughter who's a runaway Christian, you know, and I say, man, just keep running, you know. and I'm anxious to see what God's doing in her life because it's going to be spectacular,
yeah.
more than I ever had in my life.
Yeah. But when it comes to, you know, faith without works is dead, what does that mean?
It means that if you have faith without works, who knows? You know,
yeah.
it's just this little thing in your heart that you
mm-hmm.
believe in Jesus,
mm-hmm.
you know, but until you actually say something or do something, there's a great verse in Psalm 107, verse 2. It's a verse that's changed my life. You probably learned it from the navigators with your background. Let the redeemed of the Lord say so, whom he has redeemed from the hand of the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that little phrase, let the redeemed of the Lord say so. Don't shut up about it. Talk about it. So I'm on the internet all day as a Christian witnessing on Facebook. And I witness to my neighbors here at Elam Park,
mm-hmm.
and I witness when I go get a cup of coffee. You know?
Now, you are seeing people come to faith in Christ regularly.
We're seeing it regularly here at Elam Park,
yeah.
and there are people who've been wrestling with this all their lives. It's not dramatic, you know, it's not coming forward in a service, but their lives are transformed when they come to believe in Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And where we see it is when they come near to death.
Yeah. Now, you're preaching regularly.
Yeah, I preach every Sunday here at Elam Park in the chapel service.
Okay.
As part of the chaplain's team.
Yeah, and you preach the gospel every week, and is there an opportunity people have to receive Christ?
Absolutely. I ask them to contact me if they made a commitment to Christ, and some of the contacts are absolutely thrilling, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's... I love that. And are there Bible studies as well? And
we have a cluster of Bible studies in all the different buildings. I have a men's Bible study here on Monday night.
Yep.
And we have, the guy says it's weird, we have a Catholic and a Presbyterian and a Baptist in that thing, and we just have a wonderful Bible
study.
Sounds
like the start of a joke, doesn't it?
Yeah, sounds like a joke. And if you knew us, it really is a joke, the three of us, because we're really wild.
Yeah, now you did some postdoctoral study at Yale, is that right?
That's right.
And then about a left-leaning school. That's about
I wanted to make an impact at Yale for the Lord, so I said, I will teach theological German. Every graduate student has to have German to do a doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
I'll teach theological German for free if you give me the classroom.
Wow.
So they gave me a classroom, and I taught at Yale. Ironically, the book that I use is a book that was prepared by a guy I knew at Wheaton College in Illinois, and it has the gospel in every chapter.
Wow.
And so I could just talk about the Lord while I was teaching German at Yale Divinity School.
And what book was that? You got me all curious.
I'm trying to think. I think it was Siegfried Buss wrote it. One of the Buss brothers wrote the thing. And it's a book on how to teach theological or technical German, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Now, of the 30 books that you have written, what book stands out? What book comes to the surface as one of your
favorites? The last one always stands out. So Living Word in the Psalms is one that I co-authored with my friend Judy Graybar, and we had a ball because she's a smart editor, and I'm a fast writer, so I write fast and she writes right.
Uh-huh. And you have some experience in radio. You had a daily radio show on the BBC.
When we lived in Bristol, I was on three or four times a week in the morning show on the BBC, always morning show.
Okay.
And then I had a Saturday morning radio show when I was in college. And then for many years, we lived in Indianapolis, and I was on daily there on the morning show.
Yeah. Now, if you think of the grandparents that might be listening today and the fact that we want to connect them to care about the opioid addiction, would you pray for those people as we finish our time together?
God, you have given us a tremendous position of honor and a tremendous position of influence. Help us to make an impact on our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, and generations to come, because we believe that you truly set people free, even from the addiction to these drugs. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Wayne, I have to say, you are an absolute delight, and actually an answer to a very large prayer. And when I tried to connect this morning to get online, there were some very bad technical difficulties. So Wayne came to the rescue, so to speak. Thanks to Wayne, we're on the air.
Yeah, it's a really breakfast table type thing, and we're sitting around my breakfast table.
Well, we are indeed. We're actually in Wayne's apartment right now. So this is fantastic. This, I'm sure, would be a first for Faith Radio. But thanks for saving me. You've been a great guest, and it's just been a delight to meet you.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Thank you. All right, it's 3 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and be back to wrap up Hour 1 in just a minute.
If you turn the volume up, you might be able to use the carpool lane. See, it pays to listen to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
A special thanks to Dr. Wayne Detzler, who's been a wonderful guest and host this morning.
We didn't plan it that way, did we?
We did not plan it that way. And Ron Dischinger for making hour one here in Cheshire, Connecticut, such a great hour. Coming up in hour two, my partners, Mike Donnelly and Bob Stromberg, are already here around the table. We're going to have a nice conversation about a very interesting 23-year history of Triple Espresso, a show that we put together, was it 23 years ago? Hard to believe, but we're here performing this week. And if you wanted more information about that, Nelson Hall, Elam Park, hopefully I said that right, is the place to go looking for tickets. It's at Nelson Hall at Elam Park. You can Google that. It'll take you right to the box office. There are still tickets available for the weekend and also next week as well. We'll still be here through next week. So we will take a little break, and then hour two is just ahead. Thanks for being with me this morning, and a special thanks again to Dr. Wayne Detzler for helping out this morning. We'll be back with hour two in just a minute.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with the Faith in Life Minute. Pastor Tom Nelson reflects on how the work of Jesus on the cross and Jesus as a carpenter affirms the work we do every day.
The perfect Son of God came on his rescue mission, not only to rescue souls, but to rescue this planet. And he really affirmed the dignity of every work. And as I talk with white-collar, blue-collar, it amazes me that particularly blue-collar people think that Jesus, the Son of God who created the universe, came and worked with his hands. And what dignity that gives in building things, making things, and serving people. It is profoundly transforming. Mark chapter 6 tells us that Jesus was the carpenter. People knew him as a carpenter. So we need to not just see that as incidental to the story. We need to see Jesus as a carpenter dignifying work and giving us a theology of work that profoundly changes how he connects Sunday to Monday.
Hear more from Pastor Tom Nelson and find links to his book, Work Matters, at myfaithradio.com.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.